Oakland, welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. 50th episode of the Who's On Podcast today. We've got some good stuff coming your way, and we've got Zach Carey, managing editor of Streaking the Lawn, to come on and talk some basketball. Although, Zach, there's a lot going on around grounds right now. I know you've got the chance to see some lacrosse. Baseball hasn't really quite made it to grounds after having their home opener canceled, and an interesting start for them down in Puerto Rico. A promising start, too, I think. So as well. And then they go down to Texas this week for some really good games. But we're going to talk some basketball today, Zach. So thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. It's always a good time.
Yeah. It kind of struck me the other day. I left off right before I went on paternity leave, and we're at episode 49. So I was like, wow, whoever gets the first episode coming back, they get 50. That's a high honor. But
I feel honored. I appreciate it.
Let's get into this UVA and Duke game. Watching the other night, obviously Duke wins 80-62, a really good competitive first 5 minutes. Yeah. And then the rest of the game happened. But overall, I struggled to really take away anything from this game. I don't know if it stunts the growth that they made over the last three games during their win streak. And I don't know if it really, it kind of shows on the other end of it, kind of how far away they are. Although I love this Duke team, and we can talk about that more in a little bit. But just what does this game kind of change your opinion, what you had going into the game, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was like an 18-point win for Duke isn't necessarily below expectations. I know the line was like 14.5 or something. That's probably because UVA was at home. They'd won three straight. I think I tweeted it, like, if Virginia was as big and athletic and talented and as good of shooters as Duke's guys are, it might have been a close game. But it's just the reality that, like, this Duke team is elite. You know, they're top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency in the country.
The only team to do that.
Yeah, no, it's there's one UVA team that's ever done that, and they won the national championship. So, it's hard to do. I mean, I think Virginia's defensive performance, I think it showcased just like this team's flaws in the sense that they both don't have the athletes defensively. I mean, they switched 1 through 5. I think that was just because they knew that they couldn't match up, and you might as well not sort of get lost playing picks if you're not going to win matchups one-on-one anyway. So I don't blame them for that strategy, but they both don't really have like the individual defenders, and they don't have the institutional knowledge. Like, those are the two things that typically made Tony Bennett defense is elite. If you had, enough guys who'd been around, and then a couple of just like Isaiah Wilkins, Ryan Dunn, Akil Mitchells, Malcolm Brogdon's, like those types of guys that just set the tone and could win a matchup, then you could have a really good defense. This team doesn't really have any of those guys. Like, Isaac McNeely has been around, but like, if Isaac McNeely, all due respect, if he's your best defensive player, that's probably a bit of an issue. And I don't know, there were a couple, like Anthony Robinson continues to play well. I thought that was, he had 7 points, 3 for 4 shooting, that one awesome block on Cooper Flagg. So there were moments, and the backcourt played well, but there's not that much, to say about this game other than Duke is really, really good.
Yeah, fans will always have that Anthony Robinson block to take away from this game. Yeah. I think that's all they'll want to remember. Maybe the fan getting ejected too. I don't know if could you see that in real time there? Obviously, I was watching from home.
Yeah. I think he was saying some pretty intense things to Mr. Ayers, the referee there. So yeah, I saw him get tossed, and then like in the most Virginia fan fashion, just like walk out, like no security. I mean, I assume he maybe just like went up to the upper section and found a seat.
If I was him, I would just, before security got there, go up find another seat and like,
yeah.
Oh, no, that's not me. I'm a different guy.
Just take your sweater off or something. that was odd. Funny moment. Virginia fans might have felt a little bit of, getting back at Roger Ayers there. Maybe, he was personifying some frustrations.
I put out Roger Ayers' record at JPJ this season. It's two players ejected because there's one from both teams. And then one fan ejected now. So he's good for an ejection every time he comes to JPJ this season. And the Snapchat's going around like, this fan he had some choice language. So I'm not overall surprised. that he did get ejected, and maybe he was okay with that. He seemed okay with it.
Yeah.
He got his piece
I
in,
mean, if
and
you're gonna earn it, you know, if you're gonna get it, earn it, you
that's
know.
right. Earn, not given, right?
Right.
That's the
Yeah.
phrase. You kind of got into the defense, and that's a big thing that I want to talk about because I'd been looking at the numbers just over the last couple of weeks, just because it's such a weird thing that we're watching right now with Virginia basketball, one of the preeminent defenses in college basketball over the last decade plus, to kind of see where this team is now. 220th nationally in defensive efficiency. And the big stat coming out of the game against Duke was this is the fifth time this season that they have allowed 80 plus points. And that only happened 12 times in 15 seasons under Tony Bennett. Defensively, they did a lot of switching in this game, probably more aggressive than they had been doing. They had been doing a lot more switching in the last couple games. I don't see a lot of good fixes defensively because that's just the personnel that you have right now.
Yeah, no, it's a tough sort of spot to be in, and the switching resulted in offensive rebounding issues or defensive rebounding issues for Virginia, giving up offensive rebounds. Isaac McNealy said that post game, like he was saying, you know, when I asked him what were the diagnosis of the defensive rebounding problems, he just said, yeah, we were switching one through five, and we had guards matched up on bigs, and with how big Duke's guys are, you know, one through five really, that's going to be a problem. So yeah, I mean, against Duke, there weren't many solutions. I don't hate switching stuff against the right opponent. I mean, it worked well against Pitt. And they have some athletic bigs like in Buchanan and Robinson and Kofi and even Saunders. Like those are guys who can guard quicker players. And so if you don't really trust your backside rotations, then sometimes just letting those guys do their thing isn't the worst idea. At the same time, yeah, I mean, it's just tough. Like they don't have a guard who can heat up the ball really. You would like it to be Day-Day Ames. It's not really Day-Day Ames. They don't have a really capable wing defender. That would have been Jalen Worley, not to relitigate that, but they don't have that. And while they have some size and some strength and some potential in the front court, none of those guys are really, you know, sort of bona fide rim protectors, erasers on the low block. So you put all that together. And yeah, it's kind of a low floor and a low ceiling as well, unfortunately.
And one thing on the switching defense, I actually said going into this game in a radio interview, I said that I thought if Virginia could kind of hurt Duke on the glass, because some of the times that Duke has been most impacted this year is when other teams are really getting at them on the glass, because they are one of the largest lineups in college basketball, but there is a little bit of, like they can get pushed around a bit at times. That's what happened against Clemson. Clemson won that rebounding battle. But with the switching defense, I felt like so many times that, the bigs who have been much better over these last stretch of games were kind of further away from the basket. And that, kind of helps lead to some offensive rebounding issues and, the ball getting swatted out. And so, yeah, defensively, it's been kind of just, there's not a lot of solutions. It's kind of the personnel that you got. Like you said before, there's not really, I don't know if there's one guy on the roster right now that you would say he's a plus defensive player.
Yeah.
Maybe not many, probably a couple neutral, if
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. No, it's tough. I mean, you could say Robinson at times, just given over sort of the guys that he's coming in for.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I mean, just to put in context, like Duke is really good and that's obvious. And they had a good night. This was also their fourth best raw offensive performance in terms of efficiency across this entire season. And that includes, that's better than their offensive efficiency against teams like Maine and Wofford and a couple other not very good schools. So
Well, I w
like this was not a good, like it was more than just Duke being good. I'll just say
yeah,
that.
I and May th those early season games for Duke, they were really trying to figure it out still. Obviously, they have some young
Fair.
guys on the roster. And a big thing for them, surprisingly, is when Caleb Foster kind of shifted to the bench, they really started to take off with this lineup that I just love with the size and versatility. I love Zion James. He's one of my favorite players in the ACC. Just big wing, can shoot, do a couple different things for you out there. Yeah, you talk about, just defensive guys. There's only one guy that had a positive net points differential in this game, and that was Andrew Rohde. But that was more to do with how much he produces offensively for this Virginia team than his defense, because it was 17.6 points produced versus 16.3 points allowed. So not a big difference there. This is a kind of a fun trivia thing that I've been working on since the three-game winning streak. Is this year Virginia basketball better offensive efficiency than defensive efficiency? That's only happened three other times in since Tony Bennett came on. Can you name the three other seasons where that's been the case?
Yeah, I can try. Better offensive efficiency. Okay. The Hauser year, the Trey Murphy Hauser year
That's
in
the first
20.
year. Yeah, that 2020, 2021. That's the first year I think of.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I'm gonna go with okay, I'm between three for these last two spots. Was the 2019 team better on offense?
That's the most bizarre one because they were fifth in offensive efficiency, sixth in defensive
There it is.
efficiency.
Okay.
So
See,
barely.
I've scrolled through the KenPom pages too many
Yeah.
times. And then the third one I think is going to be that first Jaden Gardner year, like in 21, 22.
That one was close. They were
Oh
68th
no.
offensively, 42nd defensively. The other one that you're missing is the 15-16 team. They were
Oh wow, okay.
ninth
I could have
efficiency.
sworn one of these more recent teams. Wow, okay.
Yeah, and I mean that. Yeah, you look at that first Jaden Gardner. Was that for, no? The first one was 21-22. That would have been their 144th and offense and 117th defense. So
Okay.
those two years were pretty balanced.
Yeah.
Maybe not for the better, but and obviously these numbers don't compare offensively to
Yeah.
some of the other good years like that 21 team, the 19 team, and the 16 team, but they would be, I think, middle of the pack since Tony Bennett took over. So they'd be like eighth best offense that UVA's had since Tony Bennett came aboard.
Yeah.
Defensively, they are the worst since the efficiency statistics started coming on, and that was 97, 98. That shows how far down this defense really is right now, and a lot of that is personnel, like we talked about. Let's get back to the kind of Duke part of this real quick. Just it was our first impression kind of seeing them for a full game. I mean, I've watched a couple Duke games this year, but seeing them in person, what did you take away from this Duke team? Do they have, kind of that national championship upside for the ACC?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm not sure whether I hope so or not. It's kind of a competing interest. But no, I mean, Flag is the real deal. It's not breaking news. Probably gonna be the number one draft pick this summer. He's insane. The one block he had on Tane Murray when Murray was sort of like going for the up and under layup, and I think, I mean, it might have been goaltending. Even if it was still impressive. The way that he like came across the basket to block that gave me sort of some PTSD from that Zion block on DeAndre Hunter and JPJ. And then, excuse me. I mean, Con Knipple is really wish he was wearing a Virginia uniform, tell you that much. He was impressive, and just like in talking to, Duke brought in Knipple and Evans, I think, for the post game press conference, and it was just, they just seem like a mature group, even for being as young as they are. I think sometimes Duke is like they are too young, and it's sort of like too much based on talent. Not to, give them all the flowers here, but it seems like that this is a group that fits well together and has enough guys they can throw out there in different lineups. And they do, I mean, they do just about everything well. Like, there's not really something where you look at their roster and you're saying like this is where they can get exploited. So yeah, no, this is a legit Final Four caliber team.
And that's the thing. I don't want to, again, not to give too much credit here. It seems kind of obvious, but they've for years have brought in these highly rated recruiting classes, but they never had the veteran guys around them to kind of support that. And that's the genius of what they did this year is they go out and get a Zion James, or they get a Malik Brown, a Mason Gillis, some of these transfers to come in. Tyrese Proctor has been in the program for 3 years now, so it was smart to kind of surround these young, really talented players with more veteran guys. It seems obvious, but it's easier to say than to do. But with Duke, you got the money, you got the infrastructure. You're not going to struggle that much. UVA. At this point, I think they're sitting currently at 11th in the ACC standings right now. Pretty close to avoiding that first day of the tournament altogether at this point. A tough stretch, though, coming up for them. Obviously, they go to UNC this week, this Saturday. Then they've got at Wake Forest next week before coming home and playing Clemson. Do they move up much further in the ACC standings?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think looking at this final stretch of games, you're hoping that they can win three out of five. Like, I think that that's it's tough because Carolina,
That'd be
Wake, and
great.
Clemson. Yeah. Like, I think if you're building an ideal scenario, really kind of need to beat Syracuse on the road. And then you're hoping Florida State to win at home. And then, find a way to win one of the UNC, Wake, Clemson games. That's sort of that path. They go 3-2 like that. Which I don't think is banked. I mean, the good news is Florida State is just half a game ahead of them, so that's one spot they could jump if they win that game. Maybe they get up to like 9 or 10. At the same time, though, I think it's going to be tough to move up too far. They should probably just be hoping to not fall that much further. Not to be sorry to be, a Negadelphian, as my Philadelphia roots would imply, but this is a tough stretch of games, and that was what we said coming into the year. It was like a matter of okay, like the good news is that their toughest stretch of games in the ACC is in late February and early March, and so ideally they'd be able to string things together. It's kind of happened, like the fact that they've won what 4 of 6 now, and I don't really think you can count the Duke loss that much against them. But yeah, these are some good teams, and I mean they upset Pitt, so maybe they can do it again a couple times. But I think 11-10 is probably where they'll finish, right around there.
Yeah, that seems about the safe route to go. I can't see more than 3 wins. It'd be a stretch to get there, but I mean, this UNC game looked impossible a couple months ago, but this Carolina team, even the games they win, they don't look great. And I think both teams are going to be able to score pretty much at will. With Carolina struggling with no interior presence around the rim, and Virginia struggling with just kind of being limited defensively where they are, it'd be interesting. And the one thing is, I guess this matchup of guards for both teams, because Virginia, the top three rated guys out of that Duke game were their three guards who have played pretty good basketball over the last, couple of weeks, and Day-Day Ames, Andrew Rohde, and Isaac McNealy. Now they get to match up against UNC's guard rotation, and I guess we'll see how that takes them. But we are going to take a quick break here, and then coming up, a fun little exercise here: stock up, stock down for the entire Virginia roster, just the guys playing, of course. But we're going to take stock up, stock down, see where these guys are at this point in the season, and just talk about the overall roster. We'll be doing that right after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I still have Zach Carey here from Streaking the Line, and we're going to do a little bit of stock up, stock down, maybe some neutrals thrown in there too, because it's going to be a tough exercise looking at this Virginia basketball roster. And kind of the thing here is you could take this for however you want. Is it your preseason expectations? Is it kind of how you felt about guys a couple months ago? I'll let you kind of interpret it as you will. And you can kind of explain some of it, but I figured we'd start with a pretty easy one. I think a consensus one is Andrew Rohde, and just basically what he's done over the last couple of months. And I think it's a clear, obvious stock up for Andrew Rohde. Since they started ACC play in earnest on December 31st, 5.8 assists per game to just 12 turnovers overall. And you know, he had that stretch over the three games they won there, with 9 assists in each of those games. And I believe what just 2 turnovers against Virginia Tech, that was it. So a really promising stretch for Andrew Rohde. What have you seen from his game, and why is his stock up versus what it was going into the year?
I mean, it just seems like he's comfortable. Like, it sort of seems like he's, I mean, last year his shooting splits were, he shot 43% at the line, 34% from 2-point range, 25 from three. Now he's an 80% free throw shooter, 45% from 2-point range, 41% from three. It seems like, I mean, it's an odd world in college basketball. It feels like we swear guys off pretty quickly nowadays. Like, I mean, there are people on this roster that are sort of like that. And I think that most people did with Rohde last year, just considering, I mean, he was just like not, he was just a complete black hole on offense. He was fine defensively. But it seems like this year he sort of found his groove, and he's the player that I think Virginia fans and analysts thought he was when he committed. It took him a year to sort of adjust to ACC play, but he uses his size well. He's a good passer. He's negated some of those just bonehead turnovers. I mean, there were a couple games there in non-con play where it was just like, holy moly, like what's going on here? But I mean, I think Rohde has been an absolute strength as this team's point guard, which is not something that I think anyone would have expected coming into this season, especially given the fact that they did try to hit point guard hard in the portal and in high school recruiting. Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Andrew Rohde, this team, I don't know where they'd be, but he's been rock solid.
You know what? Just looking at his splits from last season to this year and just seeing the drastic jumps, you know what it kind of looks like is a guy that was a first-year player, and then he got into a second year and made a jump. That's what it looks like. And I know he had the year at St. Thomas, Minnesota, but maybe we had just kind of too many expectations coming off a freshman year against, you know, relatively poor competition at St. Thomas. You know, obviously he put up 17 points a game there and just a very different type of offense. I mean, he was getting up 13 shots a game at St. Thomas, and right now at his best, he's averaging, you know, about 7.5 a game. But yeah, the assist numbers have been great, and you know, you saw it in that Virginia Tech game, you know, kind of towards the end when Rohde was dealing with the foul trouble, and you know, Virginia just struggled to get anything kind of concrete going offensively, and it's because they didn't have him. And even when he did get back out there, he wasn't kind of in that flow. So I think that's kind of what it looks like when you don't have Andrew Rohde out here. So clear stock up there. Next on the list is Virginia's leading scorer is Isaac McNealy, averaging 13.7 points a game right now. Shooting 42.3% from three, I think is second in the ACC at this point. 3 assists a game, that's a little bit of a step up for him. Where are you stock up, stock down on Isaac McNealy?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm definitely not stocked down. I think he's like he's one that I think I'm stock neutral on, and I know that that's a lame answer. If I had to give stock up or stock down, I'd say slightly stock up. This is kind of what I was expecting from McNealy this season. I think he hasn't done as much of the on-ball creation that maybe would bump this offense up a notch. At the same time, like, he's asked to do a lot. I mean, you know, they have 5 games left in ACC play. He's already taken 12 more threes than he did last season. He's been a more efficient player. He's slightly lower on 3-point shooting, but he's been a slightly more efficient player playing alongside Rohde, I feel like. And you know, defensively, he's about as expected. So I sure I don't want to say that he's had a bad year. I think that maybe there would be room if this team was, you know, did manage to be a tournament team, it would probably be because McNealy was playing even better and was able to do more with the ball in his hands, because his game is kind of limited to 3-point shooting and then just finding a way to exploit teams who overcommit or try too hard to stop him from getting open looks from there. So don't have anything negative really to say about IMAC. I think that for him to hit like a full stock up for me, though, maybe just a little bit more of a diverse offensive game would have accomplished that.
Yeah, I'm going to go slight stock up here for kind of similar reasons. And I say this to everyone, and I just wish we could see an Isaac McNeely that's not counted on as the number one option every night scoring the ball. If he could be even just a number two, but mainly like a number three guy that's kind of coming off screens and able to shoot and kind of get more. And then when he does have to make those secondary moves, it's not being so relied on. We've seen him hit, a couple post up, fadeaway jumpers, that he says Kyle Guy taught him. I'm still not convinced. And yeah, so I just wish we could see him kind of in a different role this year. But I'd say like overall, like
Yeah, he's been good recently,
I've been
especially. Like, he's been
impressed.
clutch. He was clutch
Yeah.
against Virginia Tech. He's had some moments where he's been really good. I mean, I've just pulled up his recent stats. I mean, he's scored 14 against Duke, 22 against VT, 20 against Georgia Tech. And he's had some big games, like 26 against Miami, 21 against BC. So I think I'll go stock up with you. And sometimes it's also hard to balance between, like, I think everyone expected him to take a step up this year, and he has. I think he deserves credit for that. You know, like, he hasn't taken like a massive leap, but he's been, I think you're right. I think sometimes the roster construction kind of takes a toll on IMAC more than anybody else.
My preseason expectations were for him to average around 15 points. I mean, he's at 13.7. Like it's not quite there, but his recent form is kind of closer to that. But also, with more ball handling responsibilities than in years past, he's up at 3 assists a game right now compared and just 1.4 turnovers. So the turnovers have stayed relatively the same and the assists have gone up. So that's a good sign to see from him. Next up is another interesting one is Day-Day Ames. And obviously this is based off recent form, I think it's a stock up. But it took a while to get there. But I think I'd say stock up because Virginia's finally starting to let him kind of play with the freedom that he needs. And the interesting quote from Ron Sanchez when I was talking to him about Elijah Gertrude, and that he compared the two players, saying, like, yeah, you want to recruit for your system, but you also need guys that can do something, outside of the system. And that's what Day Day has provided them. And you can see that even against Duke, 15 points again. Defensively, I think he's been a really big disappointment there. Just kind of, especially in that Virginia Tech game. Hammond got going late for Virginia Tech, and almost all of that came against Day Day Ames. But you look at the scoring the last couple games, and that's the main reason he's out there on the floor. He's scored in double digits for 5 straight games, and he obviously had the big 27-point game against Pittsburgh. So I would say stock up.
Yeah, it's odd that we're going through this and everybody's been a stock up so far. I think given
We'll
preseason
get there.
expect
We'll get there.
yeah, I know. I think given preseason expectations, I think that's important context here. And I mean, I think especially before the Worley news, like I was sort of feeling like I was like, is it Ames in this rotation totally? Like, is it sort of an Ames or Rhodey situation? So I
Or
wasn't
Christian
convinced that he
Bliss.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't convinced that Ames was going to have like a very consistent role. I agree, defensively, not pretty. Straight up bad. At the same time, though, like you kind of look back and you're like, if this team didn't have Day-Day Ames, similar to Rhodey, I think Rhodey's is more valuable. But like, man, there'd be more losses if that was possible. There would be more losses on this schedule as you scroll through it. So, I don't want to give a huge, like, major stock up, but he's performed over my preseason expectations.
Think that's totally reasonable. All right, next up is Jacob Kofi, and this is one I really struggle on. Obviously his early start to the year, really good. He's had some bright moments outside of that as well. But as of late, it just doesn't seem like he is, fully, trusted to be out there in some of these big minutes. I mean, he's averaging 21 minutes, and I made this big point before the season that UVA does not play big men more than 20 minutes as in their freshman year. It just doesn't happen. But the scoring's kind of gone down outside of that 17 points against Notre Dame. I don't want to say stock down, but I would probably trend more towards stock down than stock up right now.
I think given some of his early season performances, his play in conference competition has been a slight stock down from that. I think if you were going off of preseason expectations, I don't know. Kofi is an interesting one because it felt like for a moment there, he was going to be like Virginia's. Like either starting however you want to, Saunders sometimes guards fives when they're in there together, but like that was going to be the duo in this UVA front court. And that hasn't totally manifested itself. And I think that some of that is probably just him being a freshman and maybe being asked to do a little bit more than he would typically if this was a better Virginia team. I feel bad saying stock down
Yeah.
because. But at the same time, not every nobody we can't do the whole team be stock up while they're 11th in the ACC. So
Yeah.
yeah, I'll go slightly stock down from what I thought they might be getting out of him early in the season. And I know that's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but that's what I'll go with.
And we should make the point. I feel like you feel pretty similar. Like this is not anything about his potential. I think he's just a freshman going through, the grind of playing an ACC schedule. I think he's still got really good potential, and there's a lot to play with there in the future.
No, I mean if I don't know what the heck's gonna happen. If Virginia finds a way to keep Jacob Kofi around, that would be a pretty big win. It's also just hard because like this is a tough season for this group of guys. It's an interim head coach. It's Jacob Kofi's first year in college. It's some of these guys' first year at Virginia. And so like I give this group credit for continuing to like compete. I think there was a moment there where some of that effort seemed to be sort of flagging early in ACC play. But, they've turned things around enough to be a respectable middle of the pack ACC team in an admittedly bad year for the conference. But it's also just tough because like this, I don't think that this team as currently constructed is a very good team. And so like it's not their fault necessarily. Like, if Jacob Kofi's a slight stock down, it's not his fault that the team is as middling as it is, like it's kind of tough because like Andrew Roddy's overperformed. It also means that Virginia is not doesn't mean that they're world beaters. It just means that they're slightly better than they would be if he was playing like he did last year. So tough balance there.
We'll stick with this run of big men here. Go with Blake Buchanan next. And this is one of those where it depends on the day, I think. The last two games, not at all. It's been really rough. But for the two games before that, against Pitt and against Georgia Tech, really good performances out there. The Miami game, it's his career high, 16 points and 9 rebounds. And he's had a couple other good performances this year, but the last two games, and maybe you want to throw Duke out of the equation just because it's such a different game, but I wasn't too impressed with the Virginia Tech game, and I thought later on in that game they probably should have been playing Anthony Robinson and maybe Kofi more just because of Toby Lawall. But I'm gonna go with my first neutral here because I don't know which way to go with Blake because he had two really strong games, two pretty bad games. Whereas Jacob Kofi, I feel like it's been a while since we've seen the really good game. So I'm gonna have to go with a neutral for Blake.
Blake, I mean, I think back to that SMU game, like that was sort of the first moment. Granted, they went and got beaten by Louisville by 15 or something on the road after that. But that was sort of that first game where you were like, okay, maybe this team does still have some juice, after losing both of their games out in California. That SMU was sort of a rescuing of that. And so I give him credit for that. I also thought I thought that Blake was going to be able to claim this starting center role a little bit more consistently. I'm going to go with a stock down on Blake. Probably just because I was too high on him coming into this
I was
season.
right there with you, yeah.
Yeah, like if there's one person that I've been, I think I've missed, and you can go back and read or listen to my preseason expectations. If there's one guy I've missed on like being super hyped about, it's probably Blake. I love it when he plays well. But I thought he was going to be more consistently productive this season on either end. And I haven't quite seen that across the entirety of this season. So, again, not his fault that this team is what it is. But given my stock of him coming into the year, he's been below that, which maybe is my fault and not his.
I'll go with the compliment sandwich here. The positive for Blake right now is that the energy that he's brought to this team in times that they've really needed it, getting offensive rebounds, or offensive rebounds, defense boards, they've really needed that, and some of these wins that they've picked up. The negatives that I'm seeing is it's still the hands. Like, can you catch and finish, those shots inside? That was the thing that I saw coming into this year. I was like, all right, he's had a year strength and conditioning under Mike Curtis, and he comes back a little stronger, ready to deal with the rigors of ACC play. Maybe he finishes stronger. And I think I had him as like a sneaky, could average 10 points, around 10 points a game. And we haven't seen that this year, on a consistent basis. But the games where he is finishing well, like he is getting 16, 10, 11 points, and the games he's not, it just looks even worse. And I think defensively too, he's been part of that because just a little bit slow making those rotations and giving up some points at the basket. I think he actually was better defensively for Virginia in that game, but a lot, of course, there's a lot of switching, so tough to really take too much out of that. I'm gonna stick with neutral for Blake just because he's kind of like, it's kind of like some of the stuff that we saw last year that were problems, but he's also shown that he could maybe be above that at times, and it just kind of goes back and forth. Like I said, depends on the day. The next one is another tricky one, and that's Elijah Saunders. I think for a while, people would say he was might have been your best player on the team, averaging 10.9 points a game, 5 rebounds. Then he went through that little injury spurt where he was out for, a couple of weeks, and now he's kind of working his way back into the lineup. And Ron Sanchez said he's going to kind of catch up to everyone. And they played him a lot against Duke, a lot more than they had been. So he's another one where I feel like I'm going to have to pull out the neutral because we've seen the highs of Elijah Saunders pre-injury, and then we've kind of seen the lows as well. I don't know if you feel similar.
It's odd that this team sort of had its a little bit of a renaissance while he was out. And like, I don't know how much stock to put in that. I think some of it is just like playing with more length and size in the front court as Robinson and Buchanan have sort of taken a step forward. I think that Saunders, not really through the quality of his play, but just like what his ceiling is. Like, I kind of go back to those Jaden Gardner years, which we talked about earlier. Like, Jaden Gardner was a good player. If he was your best player, it was kind of limiting. And I sort of feel a similar way with Saunders. He can shoot a three, so he's a more efficient player. But it's sort of hard to like, you don't see him like going and getting you buckets that often, against ACC competition, or at least, the upper half of the ACC. I'm gonna go neutral too. I was sort of trying to stay away from it. I was glad I went IMAX stock up so that I could go Saunders neutral here. I will also go. I thought actually early in the season there were moments where he looked completely lost. Like there were times like his point production wasn't bad offensively, but I thought on either end there were moments early in the year where I was sort of wondering if he would get it together, and then he did, and he started to produce. He had that stretch sort of from like mid to late December through early January where he was just putting out 15 or 20 a game. And that was valuable, even if Virginia was losing some games. I'd like to see them find ways to get him back in the groove of the offense. I think if he's out there, you got to feed him on the offensive end, because otherwise, I don't know if he's as valuable as some of those bigger guys or longer guys defensively. But yeah, I'll go neutral, just because it's hard to really pinpoint Saunders, and maybe it's telling that he hasn't been out there while they went on that 3-game win streak or 4 out of 5. Although, I mean, he was out there for the last two games, he just didn't play as much. So yeah, I don't know, but hard to pinpoint exactly where he is.
Yeah, and you talked about that stretch. I was looking at the same thing from December to January, and even when he's come back, I mean, he's a consistent, probably the most consistent source of points that they have in that front court right now. I mean, even against Virginia Tech and Duke, not great games for him, but he had 8 points, 7 points there, and the shot is. It hasn't been quite where I thought it was going to be. And I thought, honestly, I thought he was going to be able to play a little bit more three than he has been. And I know that's, part coaching. They don't want him kind of in that role. And I think also part of it is he can't really create off the dribble, and he can't really, unless it's a straight line drive, there's not a lot there in the dribble game. But again, I think he's as consistent as it gets in the front court when he is out there. There's only been a couple times this year. I think honestly, like the only game where like he was just kind of a complete no-show was the SMU game where he dealt with foul trouble through most of that game at SMU, and then I guess the Villanova game where he was dealing with some cramping a lot in that game. But
Yeah, that's I forgot about the cramping.
he's been probably one of the more consistent guys.
No, he has. I think there have been times where watching him, I've sort of him not being able to battle with the better front court players in the ACC has sort of skewed my view a little bit, to go a little bit more negative, just because like I thought that the ideal of him coming in was like you have this athletic four who could erase some things defensively, win a one-on-one matchup on D at times, and he hasn't really been that. He's been productive largely on offense, but yeah, that's why I'm comfortable staying in that stock neutral column. Maybe he bumps up in this last stretch.
Another clear stock up here is Anthony Robinson, and I wanted to kind of spread him and Andrew Rohde out a little bit because I think those are probably the two guys that kind of we can just totally agree are stock up right now. Last couple of games for Anthony Robinson, he's continues to put up, some pretty good numbers. Had 7 points, 3 rebounds against Duke. He was the most efficient player graded out outside of the three guards in that Duke game. So he's really the front court player that gave you kind of the best flashes. Had a couple really good and one finishes, and then obviously everyone's going to remember the block. The 15 points, 7 rebounds against Virginia Tech was kind of his, big moment, especially getting that key alley-oop late in that game. Really good performances from Anthony Robinson. It just keeps like he's stacking performance after performance. And the big thing for me with him, why he is a clear stock up, is the improvements defensively. Yes, he can still be, a step slow processing things at this point, but he has become a much better rim protector and kind of deterrent around the rim lately.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, over the last month, I mean, he's just sort of in correspondence with Saunders being banged up. But yeah, I mean, he's in the rotation, which I think is a win. Like if you said preseason, like what's a stock up situation for Robinson? I think it is be in the rotation by the end of the year, because he is a sort of project. You know, he's sort of that guy that UVA has had in the past in the front court where red shirts the first year, and you're hoping that by sort of his third or fourth year in the program, he's giving you something consistent, and he's on that path. I think I tweeted it during the Duke game. Like, if he had 5 years in a Tony Bennett defensive system, he would be a pretty elite rim protector in year five, and pretty fun to watch. We'll see if we get to see him, continue in a UVA uniform moving forward or not. But yeah, I agree, and he's been fun to watch.
Yeah, and I struggle to think like how many good, consistent rim protectors Virginia's had in recent years. Caden Shedrick for a little bit there, but obviously he dealt with the foul trouble, dealt with injuries, and then just kind of completely went anonymous in the lineup before coming back and then transferring. Probably Jay Huff was like the last really good one.
Yeah, I mean Huff was ridiculous as a just a freak of nature. But I don't think any I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't think any like true big at like that 6'10", 6'11" size has had the potential that Robinson has. Maybe I'm forgetting someone, but Virginia's thrived with some 6'8", 6'9" guys playing center. Yeah. Jack Salt, I love Jack Salt. I don't know how high he could jump. I think the highest he did was after Mabedi hit that game-tying one against Purdue, and Jack was like jumping for joy. That's probably the highest vert he's had, all love. And he was a great defender. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I loved watching him.
Great positional guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But not to like get on the Anthony Robinson hype train way too early or anything, but if he sticks around, he could be a fun sort of just big body who has a lot of length down there.
And I've said this too, and you know, we'll see how the coaching situation goes, but I think Anthony Robinson is the type of player that pretty much any coach would love coming into Virginia. And so I think he'd be high on their list of a guy that you'd want to retain.
Yeah. And probably not someone that's going to, you know, go to another high major school in the portal, and maybe he plays well enough and someone takes a shot. I don't really know anymore, but feels like a guy that no matter what happens could be around.
Elsewhere on the bench is the kind of consistent case of Tane Murray. It seems like every year we get these Tane Murray games where he explodes like the 20 points against Miami. And then it just kind of, he sinks back into the abyss of the bench, and we don't really see him much after that. And I'm sure I would almost feel pretty confident saying there'll be at least one more Tane Murray game where he comes off the bench and does some good stuff for Virginia going forward, just because that's just his entire career from freshman year to now. That's just how it's been. So I'm going to say it's neutral only because like, this is the Tane Murray that we've kind of seen consistently throughout his career.
Yeah, he's a really odd one. I think it has to be neutral. I mean, I will say the highs that he's had have been higher.
They've been higher,
Like, so they've been higher than in past years. And he's had a couple more. So maybe that, it's just so odd. Like, I remember asking, I don't know if it was me or someone else, like, Ron was asked after a game when I think Tane was out of the starting lineup and Day-Day Ames was back in. This was in maybe mid-January, early January. And he gave a very cryptic response that essentially was along the lines of, we wanted to give Tane a shot in the starting lineup, but he didn't produce when he was in there. And I think that that's just kind of like the epitome of Tane. When you're least expecting it is when he's going to put up 20.
Yeah.
and I think just for the sake of the bit, he's a stock neutral. And he's just, and it's not because he's just steady. It's because he just kind of goes like this, and then like this, and then like the average of his bell curve is just the x-axis.
No one has bigger peaks and valleys than Tane Murray,
right?
And that goes back to last season, and it's certainly been the case this year. But it's kind of like a break in case of emergency. Like, you know, we need the Tane Murray game this game. Like even in that Memphis game that he had, you know, he had 14 points just kind of out of nowhere. So it's
and they needed him against American. Like, not that we should be really talking about UVA's NCAA tournament resume, but that would have been a bad loss at home.
It would have been.
So, yeah,
just for the vibes, hurt. Just for the pure vibes.
Right. I agree.
All right. How about Ishan Sharma? It's weird, but I'm going to just say stock up. The playing time has not been consistent for him this year. I think we can safely say that, but I like when he's on the court. I feel good when he's on the court. I like having another guy that is not afraid to shoot it. What are his percentages right now? He's at 33% shooting from three. But I like when I see him out there. I think against Virginia Tech, he hit a couple good. Was that Virginia Tech? No. What game was that? It was at home against Virginia Tech. He had a couple good big threes for them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, those were big moments for him. And then he got taken out when he probably shouldn't have been. But
we can revisit that. In the SMU game too, when he had 10 points, he got taken out for Tane Murray late, and that was the whole thing. I'm going to go just slight stock up just because I like what I see him out there. There's really not enough of a sample size to say, you know, I really question this or anything. I just stock up because I think, you know, when he's in there, it looks okay, and I think there's potential for more.
Yeah, he's definitely not a stock down. It's funny, there was a lot of hype around Sharma in the preseason. Which like I think the fact that he's shooting 33% from three, like I think that is kind of like a slight knock. Just because you would kind of hope that he was in that like 38% range, so he would consistently give you one or two threes a game. I think for that reason, I'm gonna go neutral again, which I feel kind of like feel gross for doing, but he's been respectable and he's had some good moments here and there, and he's been a good guard depth piece as a freshman. I also think that that's kind of a result of this team not really having that much guard depth. And like, you know, I think if Sharma was shooting 39% from three, he might be starting over Day-Day Ames. You
Yeah.
know, granted, Ames gives you more of a spark. Maybe that would have been good as a sixth man. I don't know. But I think, I don't know. I don't want to go down, and I don't know if I've seen quite enough to give him a check in the stock up
Yeah.
mark.
Yeah. Well, I think that evens us out on the neutrals.
Okay. All right.
So,
Well, then we'll try for no more.
well, we have one player left, and that is
Oh, yeah.
the Duke transfer TJ Power. I think is probably the closest to a unanimous stock down. And I don't think we need to spend too much time on this just because it just hasn't worked for him. I have heard just talking to people, and I had Kyle Guy on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that, he's been a guy that's been hitting him up, trying to get in the gym more and really work on his game. And that's great for him that he's keeping a good spirit about it and trying to get more work in there. But I think it's really telling that in those three games that Virginia rattled off and won in a row, he did not play. He's kind of completely out of the rotation at this point. He was for a little bit kind of getting the spot minutes. He did play against Duke and kind of the garbage time in that game, but it just hasn't worked. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And just kind of maybe a misunderstanding of what kind of player he is, or just hasn't made the kind of the leaps that he needed to, and maybe just not the right roster for him as well.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel bad for TJ Power. And I don't mean that as pity or anything. It just, you know, it stinks. You know, you want to see, you know, even, you know, taking a neutral perspective, you know, you want to see these guys succeed. And it's tough considering he was a five star, he went to Duke, transferred looking for more of an opportunity, and just haven't found it. And I think that it's tough. I don't think his positional fit works with this team. Maybe on a better Virginia team, he would have more of a role. Like honestly, like if they could sort of hide him a little bit more defensively, if they didn't have like a Kofi or a Robinson in the front court, maybe he'd get more minutes there. But he just can't really hang defensively, and then he just hasn't really, when he's had chances, hasn't hit from three. And like you could maybe give him 8 minutes a game if he could, you know, if you gave him four shots from three in those minutes and he could hit 35% of them for you, like he did as a freshman at Duke. That was kind of his role. But he's 18% from three, you know, and that's only on 32 attempts. So I don't mean to, you know, rub it in or anything, but yeah, been a tough go of it. We'll see what happens moving forward for him. Maybe a transfer down to a lower sort of conference team would
Yeah.
give him the opportunity to sort of take on a bigger role and maybe get back to the type of player he was in high school.
The one other thing I've noticed with TJ this year is, and I didn't watch a ton of his Duke tape. Obviously the minutes were kind of limited there, but he's got like a hitch in his shot and like a hesitation. And that's something you don't really see from a guy that's billed as a, confident 3-point shooter. I haven't really gone back to see like if that's something that he had last year, but just was maybe had more of a green light to go ahead and shoot it. I'm not really sure, but obviously, I think when was his last 3-point make
Well, he hasn't
was,
hit a field goal in
yeah.
2025, not to really dunk, but
His last
that's
3-point make was at SMU on December 7th. That was the last time he made a 3-point shot. So, just hasn't worked out. I think the most he's scored this year is 5 points against Villanova. That's a long time ago, but yeah, it just hasn't worked out. But overall roster now, stock up, stock down. And you could take this from any angle you want. Like I said, I will point out this. Back in May, it was May 15th when the Virginia basketball roster was set. And I tweeted out the roster. Obviously, at the time, Tony Bennett was the head coach. Jalen Worley was on the roster in some different circumstances. But Jeff Goodman retweeted that tweet and said, Tony Bennett is going to win the ACC with this group. Obviously,
Well,
that's a great freezing cold takes line. Technically, Tony Bennett is not the coach. I
yeah.
don't know if it would have been that big a
Hey, and
difference
this team
still.
looks good in orange, so Goodman must be happy, right? I
Yeah.
mean, anyway.
But stock up, stock down for the overall roster. And you could take that all the way back from May when the roster was finalized, or you could take it from the preseason, or you could take it from like a month ago.
Yeah, I think I'm just gonna go stock down. It's an easy thing to say, and maybe there's some more nuance there. Lot of young guys, but when you just look at and you know it's an odd world we live in where like players are paid and investment matters. And I think if you look at the investment of this team, not that I know any exact numbers, but if you look at the investment and you kind of go among the guys who you were expecting to have the most impact, hasn't totally been the case. You know, like I think Power, we just talked about him, but like that was a big miss. Like that was the headliner. And I know that maybe we, you know, I don't know if his pedigree necessarily lined up with reasonable expectations for year one, but he's definitely not performed to those. You know, Saunders being a neutral is like, not to like get super galaxy brain, but like him being a stock neutral is probably in the long run a net negative. You know, Isaac McNealy has been good, not great. Andrew Rohde has been good above expectations. At the same time, like he was bad last year. So the fact that he's overperforming that is great, but not that much of a needle mover. The young pieces have been like, I don't know if you can ask that much more of a Kofi, of a Robinson, of a Sharma. It's why I was either neutral or just slightly down on those guys. Tane Murray is another. Like, I don't think you can ask that much more of him. But what you've seen a lot with Virginia teams is that the sum of the pieces, or what is it? I'm blanking.
Some of the parts,
Some of the parts is whatever. It's greater, whatever you want to. You know the saying. I'm completely blanking. Probably have the flu. But we've seen that with a lot of Virginia teams in the past where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. There
Yeah,
it is.
there we
Okay.
go.
All right.
There's that
Man.
Virginia education coming in
Yeah,
again.
exactly, right? Man. All right. It's snowing. There's a lot going on here. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. We've seen that a lot with Virginia teams in the past, and that's not the case with this team. And I think for that reason and some of the other things I laid out, I'm comfortable going stock down.
Yeah, and I mentioned before you could kind of take it from a couple different ways. I think before the season, even after Tony Bennett retired, I would say stock down on this roster. Has not lived up to what we thought it could from a month ago. Probably stock up because it was looking really grim there for a while, and you weren't sure if they were going to figure anything out. And they figured out enough to win, the games that they probably should have won against, Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech and Pitt, Miami. But yeah, like you were saying, I think if you look at it as the whole, if you look at the parts, there's probably only two guys that we would comfortably say have outlived their, preseason expectations, and that's Andrew Rohde and Anthony Robinson.
Yeah.
Outside of that, like you said, a neutral for Elijah Saunders is a big hit. A not strong up for Isaac McNealy is a strong hit against.
Yeah.
And there just hasn't been as enough hits. A Blake Buchanan not being a strong hit, that hurts. This is a roster that was a little bit more limited, had some high school, accolades and everything, but they needed guys to hit, and there just haven't been as many hits as you'd expect. So yeah, stock down overall on the roster. I thought this was a good exercise just to kind of look at the
Yeah.
overall team at this point as we head into the final five games of the season, and it is coming fast. But Zach, thanks for hopping on the Who's On podcast today, and we will look forward to seeing some more as we round out this basketball season and get into those spring sports.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me. It's been a fun one. Hopefully for fans' sake, UVA can string a couple together at the end here.
We will see. All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. You can follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you can find your podcasts. A lot going on at thesaber.com as well as we get into baseball season. Also got some stuff on basketball and spring football. Not as far away as you think at this point. So we got some good stuff coming up there, but that'll be it for the Who's On podcast. We will see you next week.